Hello, and welcome to this podcast from Consider This. Please let me know what you think and tell others about us on social media. This podcast was originally broadcast live on Northumberland 89.7 FM. You can hear this show live every Friday at noon. Thank you for downloading this program, and I hope you enjoy it. Hello, I'm Robert Washburn, and welcome to Consider This Northumberland, a current affairs program dedicated to the issues facing our community. We talk to the people on the front lines and those behind the scenes who make a difference in your life in Northumberland County. So I'm asking you, the listener, to take some time out of your busy day to consider this. What do you think? That's a really good question. But not everyone is interested in the answer. Unless you are my guests this week, they care a lot about what people are thinking these days. The first interview is with David Sheffield, Executive Director of the Greenwood Coalition. It has launched a series of conversations to engage people living in Northumberland. They want to know about addressing some of the most serious issues facing the most vulnerable in the county. Is it affordable housing? The opioid crisis? Addressing poverty? Universal basic income? Racism? The environment? Maybe it's the future of Indigenous people. Everything is up for grabs. David will share his thoughts on these potential topics and explain how the conversations are going to work. More importantly, how people can participate. I'm so pleased to have with me today David Sheffield, the Executive Director of the Greenwood Coalition. Welcome to Consider This.
Thanks, Rob. Good to be here. I always enjoy having a conversation with you.
Thank you so much. Greenwood Coalition has restarted its Community 101 lecture series once more this past week. Can you tell us what it is about?
Sure. Yeah, the lecture series wouldn't describe what we're doing this summer, but in the past we have presented things that brought in speakers and sort of shared ideas and allowed for some discussion within that. But we feel that right now what's needed is a lot of listening. I think with the pandemic period, we've seen a lot of things. We've had opportunities to reflect. We've had time to think about what would we like to see beyond this, and that kind of community conversation is something that I've been having a little bit of in small batches, but looking forward to on a wider scale. And I think there's a lot of potential waiting to be released by that. And so we're calling this a series of learning conversations.
If there is one thing the pandemic has done, it has created a stark contrast of the plight of the most vulnerable in our community, the elderly, the homeless, mental health services, and others. As someone who has been on the front lines, what inequities did you see emphasized by the pandemic?
Yeah, we saw the inequities that are there in our society, in our systems, amplified a bit during that time period. One of the observations that I started making early on, and I'll still stand by, is that some of the folks who had the most difficulty navigating through that pandemic period were more middle class people. The people who were had less resources available had been going through difficult times for many years, and had developed a resilience and response to that. And so in terms of their ability to navigate that, they were actually doing better than some folks I know that were kind of middle class and relied more on alcohol during that period than they ever had before to navigate it, there were interesting little observations, but clearly, what what is needed in our community is, you know, housing for everyone and access to food and those basic needs. But when we only look at the folks who have the least amount of those things, when we only look at them as being needy, we really miss a significant part of how we're going to make this better. And that part is going to come through listening to those folks and their experience and what they bring to it, because those people who were homeless, hungry, working through that pandemic period, and not being not landing in a worse position than they were, they've got something to teach us. And so often, instead of looking at folks as being needed, look at them as these folks have what's needed here. And so if we can figure out how can we do this with them rather than for them, what would that look like? And how can we enliven that part of the community? So it's different from the consumer model that we're typically looking at, where there's what we have to do is identify a problem and then we have to buy a solution. And in social work, it's we have to buy a professional to deal with this thing. If we look at this in more of a sharing economy, what does this person who has been homeless have to teach us about ending homelessness, for example?
But what in particular, though, has the pandemic done that you think will inform this conversation that you want to have? As from what you've observed and what you've experienced, how is that going to influence the conversation going forward, or how do you see it influencing the conversation as you go forward?
I think the disruption has been helpful. I think disruption is good for us. I think we had gone a long stretch with thinking we knew everything and we knew something like this could never happen, and then it happened, and so a lot of my hope is built on that disruption that happened. And I'm hoping that, I'm a little bit nervous in looking at how things are opening up again, that are we just going to go back to what we did before? Or are we going to, forget that? But I think that, in conversations that I've been having with folks around the community, I really feel like there's an appetite to do things differently, and for folks that sort of experience that disruption, they know that if they're isolated and alone in a community like ours, that they're at more of a disadvantage than if they're connected to others and if they're working together on something different. And so I think that's there, and I think that folks will step up to that, but I think it has to look different than we've seen before. And again, that's why we come back to this 6-week learning series that we're starting tomorrow, or starting this week, is that we want to hear from people. We want to hear how they've been disrupted in a good way, how that has led them to think about, okay, how can I use my gifts and abilities to build a stronger community here, to do some good things? And whether that's picking up the garbage in their neighborhood or taking on something that has more widespread long term effects, that thing that you're passionate about, that you're willing to act on, can we connect that with a couple of other people who are passionate about that same thing, and let's talk about what you have to bring to that. I just feel like there's so much untapped in our communities that we need a mechanism for opening that up.
You've already alluded to the issue of housing prices, and we've seen housing prices soar locally. I mean, as of June, the average price of a house is close to $850,000. What is the conversation we need to have around affordable housing?
Yeah, I think you've brought up one significant shift that happened during the. I mean, it was happening already, but it seems like it again was amplified during this time period. And I think we're gonna come out the other end of this, and some people are gonna be surprised at where ownership of property has gone and what that looks like. We've looked at that over the last while. Our last Community 101 series, we featured the Push film that is about the worldwide housing crisis and what's happening. And what we're seeing in Cobourg and Port Hope, Northumberland, is very much on par with what's happening in the rest of the world. And so there's something big that's going on that isn't particularly local. And so I think for us in our community to ask ourselves, okay, what can we, given that, what can we do? I think that is really significant. So we can spend time and we discuss this a bit. We talk about what do we do about that worldwide housing situation, or what do we, what does the federal government need to do? And so we can have those conversations, and some people may find that their passion is writing to politicians and keeping those issues there. But we can also look at our neighborhood, at our neighbors, and look at what that displacement is looking like, and is there something that can be done? So I've had conversations over the last few months with a number of business people who are wondering about, is there something that they can do? I care about my community. I want to live here, and I want my children to live here. I want this to be a place that is welcoming and et cetera. What can I do as a business person? And so that's kind of the exciting part of where we're at coming out of this disruption, maybe it's a shift in values or a reorganization of our values that can turn into concrete things like creative housing solutions that can happen in a neighborhood. Maybe we can't end homelessness in Canada over this discussion, but maybe there's a way to create 4 new housing units that weren't there before, and looking forward to how to do that and how the gifts of the community can make that happen and make that successful over time.
Moving on, another conversation coming out of the pandemic could be about the opioid crisis in our community. I spoke with the Cobourg Police Chief as part of today's show, and he pointed out to the rising number of calls related to overdoses, the increase in deaths, and a recent rash of bad drugs circulating in our region. How do you think we should be framing this conversation coming out of the pandemic?
Yeah, that's a good question, Rob, because it's a life and death situation that's happening right now, and it's one thing for me to talk about how the community can get together and pick up the garbage in their neighborhood or get together and build a playground in their neighborhood, but how do we address those bigger picture things? And certainly we've seen a bit of default during the pandemic period to just enforcement. And in the sort of the world of harm reduction of substances, that's only one of 4 pillars that recovery can be built on, and so that's there's an area for some work there, but I think bringing that back to a very human level, a very neighborhood level, is really important. So for example, we've been working with some folks who struggle with substance dependency, but also have an interest in gardening, and so we've been supporting them to build some gardens in their neighborhood, and there's an opportunity for them to meet their neighbors, to have a different kind of interaction, and so again, I can't stop the dangerous drug supply at the moment. I mean, we write letters, we talk to politicians, we do all the things, spending time with folks human to human, and understanding where they're coming from, what their strengths and abilities are, that may, help them stand on their feet a little bit more, give them a little bit of hope. A neighbor can give another neighbor a bit of hope, a bit of trust, that kind of thing. And over the years, we've seen those things turn into such positives that you can't discount that part of the puzzle. And I find, I don't know, for me, digging into it, when there's a problem or there's a concern or something, can be a positive too. But when you dig into it and you start working with it and you start sitting with it, well, creative ideas come, things come forward. And so, reconnecting that isolation that's happened and allowing for those conversations to happen is really important. I'm a big believer in the third space concept, that your home being your first space, where typically people agree with you, and so you don't challenge your thoughts too much. Your workplace is a second place, second space in the community, where you there's often an agenda, something is prescribed in that. But third space is those community spaces that are kind of neutral space that everyone is welcome at, and bring together a mix of ideas, so that the old-fashioned neighborhood pub is one example that would welcome anyone, or a coffee shop, if it's a welcoming place, that provides that neutral ground for different ideas to come together. And as that happens, there's a synergy that can happen. And often that's where community solutions come from, is from third spaces. And so maybe this online, 6-week series that we're working through, maybe that's a bit of a third space, where if we listen to each other, some of these things will become clearer. Hopefully at the end of this, you and I could talk, and hopefully I've got some fresh ideas and as we listen to our neighbors and us.
Speaking of bringing people together and coming up with plans, Northumberland County staff are working on a community safety and well-being plan. What are your impressions of this initiative? Because the police chief suggested it could be a coordinated approach needed to address opioids in the community and similar issues. What do you think?
That's an initiative of policing in Ontario, and so it's a bit shaped that way. There's been some consultation on that through the over the last period. It wasn't really the ideal conditions through the pandemic to create a community safety and well-being plan, although it has shown up some pieces. I think what I would say about that is it's very important for that community safety and well-being plan to include the community, to include citizens, to recognize what the community can bring to this, what the gifts or the strength of our community, how can they contribute to the community safety and well-being. And I'll give you a little example. I was talking, my sister-in-law is she was a school teacher, and she left that profession and teaches some private music lessons, and she's been doing some kind of songwriting retreats, and kind of a little community choir has emerged, some folks that always thought they'd like to sing. And so she's been doing that. And she was asking us about, you know, okay, how can, you know, how can I do, you know, something for, you know, folks that are, you know, in difficulty in the community. And I turned it around on her and I said, you're using your gifts and abilities and you're doing, you know, mental health prevention work, and you need to recognize what you're doing in that place and how important that is. And I think that we need to think about that as well when we say, you know, getting help with mental health. You know, that's become a big concern at the moment. And part of that is having access to professionals when that's needed, but also the prevention work, the sustaining work that neighbor to neighbor can do, that a community can do, and we have those things, and so this is what you know has me excited about doing this kind of work, because I feel like that potential is there, that desire to do better is there, and if we can do something to be a catalyst for some of that coming forward, that's kind of community safety and well-being plan that I like, a healthy neighborhood, a healthy community.
This past Canada Day, we saw efforts to empower residents to act following the revelations of unmarked graves of children next to residential schools. And while there is a laundry list of things people can do to make a difference towards the future of Indigenous people in our community, one symbol or icon, if you like, is the statue in front of Port Hope Town Hall of Colonel Arthur Williams. Some conversations have already started. What would you like to see added to these public discussions as part of your series?
Yeah. So there's an interesting situation. I'm not a Port Hope resident. I spend a lot of my time here, but for folks that are Port Hope residents to connect as a community and ask themselves, what kind of community do we want to live in? What's going to make the world a better place? And so is continuing to celebrate, a massacre of Indigenous people. What we want to celebrate in our community, and if not, what does that look like? And so I've been watching. There's a small group of folks that are kind of working on that question, and mostly a group of moms in the community who gathered on July 1st at that monument and just had conversations in the community. They did some letter writing, and I understand that there was a meeting held there that afternoon of folks that would like to see a different vision for that, and so there seems to be an ongoing conversation, and that's exactly what I support, the community connecting and listening to each other and learning what could happen here, and staying curious about these things. I think curiosity is I've always felt like the curiosity is what will kill me, but I think in general I encourage curiosity because that's where the solutions can come from. And so if we're curious about that statue or those other symbols and obstacles to reconciliation, then I think we can find our way through those things, and it just doesn't have to be necessarily an either or, and this is, I mean, certainly a time for those of us that descend from settlers and have benefited from the harms done to Indigenous people. This is a time for us to be learning, listening, but also acting. And so that action can be toppling a statue. That action can be meeting with an intention to topple the statue or whatever is the best outcome to celebrate what we want as a community.
If people are interested in participating in this series, how can they get involved?
So just a quick email with their name to info@greenwoodcoalition.com, or go on our various social media, et cetera, and you can get connected there. And so we're doing this series on Zoom. I look forward to the day when we'll be doing this in person, but we'll be doing it on Zoom with extensive use of the breakout room option. So most of the conversation will happen in very small groups on this. And so info@greenwoodcoalition.com will get you connected to a link to that. And some folks have been asking, so this is a 6-part series that we're doing. Some folks have been asking, being summer and all, a lot of, life is disrupted in a different way, in a good way, hopefully. And folks have been asking whether, they could attend one or they could attend part of it. And so we're trying to, it's set up as a progressive series, and we're hoping as many people as possible can kind of work through the whole thing. But we're also setting it up as, standalone events that people can tune in and join the topic of the day or the framing of the day.
What's on the horizon for the Greenwood Coalition?
Well, I think that's the topic of the week or the month for us, certainly. As things start to open up again, we're being asked, are you going to have a community dinner again? Or are you going to, what does reconnecting the Greenwood community look like? And we had a bit of a come and go gathering for the solstice. We normally have our solstice garden blessing and have a bunch of people there, but we did a little bit of a thing with stations and a come and go and a takeout meal, and that worked well. We were able to do it safely and keep our numbers down at any particular time. We did it over several hours, and so we're looking forward to that. I mean, we just believe in eating together with other people. That's the easiest way for it to get from A to B, and so it's been hard for us this last while, but moving back towards something like that. We've continued doing art programming and that kind of thing, sort of with drop-off kits and so on. And so bringing that back into, just kind of reconnecting at a pace that seems safe for us and also comfortable for folks who have been disconnected and have to, we have to relearn how to navigate as humans. But I think that the Greenwood community has been a great place for me to go through a lot of challenging times, and I think that we'll find our way forward and look at how we can make the world a better place by working together as a community.
David Sheffield, I want to thank you so much for talking to me today.
Pleasure always, Robert. Thank you.
That was my interview with David Sheffield, Executive Director of the Greenwood Coalition. Thank you for listening to this podcast from Consider This. If you have any comments or would like to suggest a story, please contact me at considerthisnorthumberland@gmail.com, or you can message me on Facebook at Consider This. If you enjoyed this podcast or are looking for more news and information about Northumberland County, please check out my website at consider-this.ca. That's consider-this.ca. And don't forget to share. And again, thank you for listening, and stay tuned for more from Consider This.